And what does that mean for all of you? Well, it's coming to the Kulch. It's a very interesting thing. And I'll let Jason speak for himself, coming up right now on CITR 101.9 FM. You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are here with Jason Erlander. Hello.
Hey, hi, how's it going?
Tell us a little bit about what it is you do.
Well, I am a writer and director and producer mostly of theater work, so very excited to be coming to Vancouver with my project, The Intergalactic Nemesis.
And that is a three-part project, isn't it?
It is, in fact, a trilogy. We'll be coming with the first installment in the trilogy, Target Earth.
What kind of media is it that you work in?
My background is in theater. This project actually came out of a theater company that I founded in Austin, Texas, where I'm from, called Salvage Vanguard Theater. It got its start as a radio play, actually 20 years ago this year, that me and some friends threw together as a total lark in a coffee house in downtown Austin. But the project developed an audience over the years because I kept bringing it back because it was so much fun. I got invited to bring this radio play into a huge theater in Austin, a 2,400-seat venue, and I just felt like that was way too big for the intimate experience of watching radio drama be performed. This was in the summer of 2009 that I got this invitation. And in the meeting, kind of in a flash, I came up with the idea of projecting comic artwork on a screen the size of the proscenium to create a spectacle that could fill a room that big. It just so happened that the venue had just bought a cinematic projection system, and they were looking for reasons to use it, so it was this amazing moment of serendipity. And so it took about 15 months to develop all that artwork. There were 1,250 individual comic book panels that get projected on the screen over the course of the show. But in the fall of 2010, we premiered this new iteration of the Intergalactic Nemesis that we now called a live-action graphic novel. We have been touring the world with it ever since.
Your performance involves the projection of graphic art, and it involves a radio drama that includes both performers and the sound effects people and equipment. Is that right?
Yes, although in our case, it really is a sound effects person. What the audience is going to get out of the Intergalactic Nemesis is an adventure story fired by pulp sci-fi of the 1950s, and also inspired by Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark, and a little bit by Golden Age Hollywood movies, particularly how we crafted the dialogue. And the way we tell that story is by projecting the artwork from this graphic novel version of the project that I wrote, panel by panel, on this huge screen. And then three actors are going to voice all of the characters. A Foley artist is going to create all the sound effects, and a pianist performs a cinematic score, and it's all done live in front of your eyes. So it's a project that mashes up radio drama and comic book formats to tell a story that works quite well in both of those formats.
What was it that you've learned along the way of putting this together?
Gosh, we've learned a lot, because it's been a lot of years of doing this project. When we first put it together, it was pretty ragtag. There wasn't a lot of thought into it. As I mentioned earlier, we kind of did it as a lark. It was pretty thrown together, pretty spontaneous, and there was no thought in terms of like a longer lifespan. The first lesson that I learned on this project, once it looked like maybe there was a life beyond that original version of it, was really hone that storytelling into something that could withstand strangers coming to see it as opposed to just our friends. As the project evolved, particularly once it evolved from radio into this hybrid format, learning how to tell an audio story visually was a big key component to it, because one of the things that's very different from the Intergalactic Nemesis live-action graphic novel versus a radio play is that all of the things that would normally be described by a narrator or by the characters in terms of what people are seeing, obviously we can actually show on the screen. And so the experience of watching the show becomes much more cinematic. So as the project evolved into this new format, I and my co-author, Chad Nichols, really kind of sat down with the material and started thinking of it in the writing more like a movie than we were thinking of it in terms of a radio play. And we kept some of the components of radio play, for example, the feel of sort of perpetual cliffhangers that happen within the storytelling. But we also started to look at the story as a more traditional cinematic kind of three-act structure. And even though our show has only one intermission in it, you can definitely, if you know how movies are structured, you can definitely see the influence of that on this project as it's told in front of an audience now. Because originally when we did it, we did it serially. There were 10, 15 or 20 minute episodes. Each one ended with a cliffhanger. Because we kind of threw it together, there wasn't a lot of thought put into the larger arc of the storytelling. The focus was mainly on sort of development of each individual episode. So with the project as it stands now, it's got a definite, very clear arc to it that tells a totally cohesive story, but still trying to retain the fun things about radio play, for, you know, like all the really fun sound effects, for example. One of my fondest memories of being a kid was watching those old Flash Gordon and the Buck Rogers serials with my dad on TV Saturday mornings when they were broadcast, and back in the days of broadcast television. And it was my memory, and it's a little fuzzy because I was probably like 9 or 10 years old, is that they were, that our local independent TV station did show them serially. And so I remember tuning in, you know, Saturday after Saturday to watch these stories unfold. Yeah, it's a huge influence on what we did with Intergalactic, for sure.
And is that where the story came from? Were you inspired to try to create some sort of early 20th century golden age story to begin with?
Yeah, I think that and the things that Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers inspired also, say Star Wars and Raiders. You know, I was 7 when Star Wars came out in the movie theater. You know, that was just one of the most profound viewing experience that I still remember so clearly. You know, I feel like it's really one of my earliest very clear memories. So that's hugely influential. But also when I was, you know, probably 12, 13, 14 years old, I got pretty deep into reading the short story pulp fiction of that era as well, you know, Isaac Asimov, Ray Bradbury, those guys. But for me, that has a huge influence on this as well. Then when I was in my mid-20s, I discovered Golden Age Hollywood kind of A-list movies. You know, when we were doing the rewrites on this material to get it up to where it is now, Chad and I really went back to mainly His Girl Friday, a little bit of The Philadelphia Story, and a little bit of Bringing Up Baby, to just hone in on how they crafted that incredibly sharp dialogue when they were at their best back then, and to try to bring that into our storytelling as well. And then looking even more recently at the also kind of an 80s, and there are a lot of 80s references in this as well, because that's when I was a teenager. So there's a little bit of Terminator in there. There's a little bit of Alien in there. Also looking at Lawrence Kasdan's writing, particularly, you know, even though our show is totally family friendly, the writing in Body Heat is definitely an influence. Also his scripts of Raiders of the Lost Ark and Empire Strikes Back as well.
So you mentioned your writing partner, Chad. Who else have you been working on with this project?
Well, from the beginning, one of the key collaborators has been a guy named Buzz Moran, who created all the sound effects for the show. And one of the really fun things about the show as it exists now is that we still use a lot of the sound effects that we threw together back in the mid-90s with the project, when there was no budget whatsoever. So, you know, one of the things the script back then called for that still is in the material is the sound of hypnotism, for example. So, you know, obviously that, you know, we could do whatever we wanted with that. And what Buzz did, he had never done sound effects before working on this project, but it turned out that he had collected up all of these toys that made weird noises from when he was a kid. And he had a closet filled with this stuff that we grabbed to make the sound effects for Intergalactic. And so one of the toys that we grabbed was something called a five-tone tube, which I probably everybody's seen this. It's like a corrugated plastic tube, the diameter of which is about, you know, an inch and a half or maybe 2 inches. And you swing it you spin it over your, you grab one end and spin it over your head and make this weird, like, woo-woo-woo-woo-woo sound. And that became the sound of hypnotism that we still use to this day, which is just hilarious and visual and sounds otherworldly. Example, sound of a train running down the tracks. Here we were pulling from Buzz's closet and kitchen, and we ended up grabbing a box of macaroni and cheese, and Buzz started shaking it in just such a certain way, and lo and behold, we found exactly the sound of a train running down the tracks for this particular scene, and we still use that to this day as well, which is, it sounds amazing, and it's completely hilarious to watch. Buzz was a guitar player and a drummer, and I didn't know any Foley artists back then, so when we first started doing this, my instinct was to invite a musician to create the sound effects, because I figured their sense of, you know, it wasn't just a question of making something that sounded like what it was supposed to sound like. It was also a question of fitting it in rhythmically into the show so that there was this kind of almost like a score happening with sound effects and dialogue working together. So it was very random that Buzz, that I happened to invite a guy to be a part of it who happened to collect all the stuff that made noise. I mean, I didn't know that about him before inviting him to be a part of it. So it was, you know, just kind of an incredible happenstance. And what's really cool is that Buzz now makes a living doing that stuff for both theater and film. So this project, you know, changed his life a little bit as well. And he's still one of my very, very best friends. Other collaborators include Graham Reynolds, who wrote the score for the show. He and he's some pretty large, major Hollywood movies, mostly with Richard Linklater, who did Boyhood and Before Midnight and other films. And Graham has done the original music for several of Rick's most recent pictures. What Graham did is he wrote he's an improviser, and so he wrote the score to be improvised. So we used a little bit of Richard Wagner and a little bit of John Williams as our influence for how to create the music, in that we've written these themes that either apply to characters or situations. And within the script, it's indicated when music comes in what theme you're going to be working from in the music. But then the pianist then actually improvises around those themes underneath monologues or during action to develop the music further. And we did this for two reasons. One, Graham's totally into improvising. And two, we thought this would be an easy way to allow for the music to work with different performers so that we weren't locked into something particular, and allow a bit of interplay between performer and music, actor and music. So anyway, so Graham created this really cool, adaptable music for the show that we now have this incredible pianist, his name is Harlan Hodges, playing it, and he really is just like unbelievably talented. It's just so cool because it really sounds like something that John Williams would write for one of these classic adventure movies. Pretty awesome.
And you said you've been taking the show all over the world in past years, and I believe you're also coming to Vancouver here?
Yeah, we sure are. Can't wait for that. We've been wanting to get to Vancouver for a while now. I just feel like that your city and our show are a really, really good match for one another. So we're really excited. We're going to be at the Cult with it coming up.
Right. And when is that?
April 30th and May 1st.
April 30th and May 1st. So that's the weekend, Saturday, April 30th, and Sunday, May the 1st. And the Cult is a very intimate setting. It's a lot like how you envisioned what you were saying about the envisioning of the original, of how it was supposed to be sort of this intimate performance setting. And I've been to the Cult a few times. It's not a 2,400-seater. So there is definitely going to have that intimate effect.
Yeah, and the cool thing about the show is it really adapts to the set. It can work in a huge theater, and it can work in a small, intimate theater as well, because really the only thing that really changes is the size of the screen that we're projecting on. So one of the things I love as we've been touring is performing in these smaller venues where the audience gets the best of all worlds. You know, they get this visual spectacle with projections, but there's also everybody in the house can actually see the faces of the voice actors and see exactly how those sound effects are being created. And even if you're in the right seats, you know, watch the hands of, you know, watch Harlan's hands as he plays the scores. A venue like the Cult, we discovered, is absolutely perfect for this show. And, you know, one of the things that's really fun about it is, for us, is, as we've been touring, this is our fifth year being on the road with the show, is that the audience that comes is really varied. I mean, you get folks who are radio play fans, you have folks who are comic book fans, you get people who are fans of, you know, the kind of pulp adventure storytelling that might not be into comic books or radio play. And then you get this incredible cross-section of ages, from parents bringing their kids to, you know, millennials coming on a date, to people who grew up on radio drama and are coming for that nostalgia kick. It really is pretty awesome when you're in the theater just to see the sheer range of types of folks who come out to see the show. And one of the things that has been really, for me, just doesn't get old, is the fact that I know that when we first get to a city with the first installment in the trilogy, that, you know, the audience is coming out of just sheer curiosity. And what happens 9 times out of 10 is that they walk out of the performance actually being like true bona fide fans of what they just saw, you know, excited for the next one. As I said, like Vancouver in particular is a city that I've been itching to get us to for a long time. Absolutely thrilled that we're going to be able to be there finally.
Do you have any final thoughts? Any other upcoming projects that you might want to talk about?
You know what? We can stay focused. I am working on some other things, but they're all pretty nascent at this point. You know, the main thing is just excited to get up to Vancouver with Intergalactic. And one of the things for the folks who are going to be able to make it out to see the performance is if you are interested in taking a bit of the project home with you, of course, we sell the radio play and graphic novel versions of the project. And the whole cast actually comes out after the show and they sign everything that anybody buys. So it's a really fun way for us to be able to get to meet the audience and interact with our new fans. So that's essential. So if you come, be sure to say hi to the cast after the. For those of you who can't make it out, I should probably just say it. Our website is theintergalacticnemesis.com. Pretty straight up, or just Google the Intergalactic Nemesis for the first thing that comes up.
And you've been here on Skald Soul at CITR 101 with Jason Neurolender. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who have experienced sexual assault, intimate partner violence and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical and campus-related advocacy and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3127. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssask.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
For a taste of the classics with a twist, join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
And you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. And just a little bit of a follow-up, theintergalacticnemesis.com. That is the website that you can go to learn a little bit more about the multimedia presentation we were just talking about. And if you go there, they have a shop website And you can buy bits and pieces. You can buy different things. As said before, there's visual art, and you can get some of the visual art in forms of a graphic novel, actually. And we're audio drama people, and they've edited their stuff into actual bonafide radio drama series that you can listen to online or buy as CDs. It's really, really interesting. And so they have a lot of stuff there that I thought we should point out. And coming up for the bottom part of the hour, we're going to be taking a preview. Listen to the radio drama edit of The Intergalactic Nemesis right here. So sit back, relax, take a listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare to be taken on an epic journey of danger and adventure. It's The Intergalactic Nemesis! Our story begins in the year 1933. Somewhere in the Carpathian Mountains of Eastern Europe, a blizzard rages. Yet, protected from the elements in a small cabin with a fire blazing on a hearth, three lone figures gather around a small wooden table.
Okay, let's get cracking. I've got a story to file. Timmy, you got a pad ready?
Yes, Molly.
Okay, Vlad, give me the skinny on this pelt smuggling ring.
I'm sorry, Miss Sloan, but I'm afraid your story may be at a, how do you say, dead end.
Your letter said you knew the smuggling routes, that you'd help me find them. Don't tell me I came all this way for nothing.
What you say is true, but the smugglers no longer use these routes. Something has scared them away. I have heard many stories. Terrible monsters, horrible odors, like the very brimstone pits of hell.
Real live monsters? I'd sure like to get a gander at that.
Timmy.
This is a superstitious place, yes? As long as men have lived in these hills, there have been such tales. Werewolves, vampires, goblins. But this time is different. These smugglers scoff at fairy tales and ghost stories. But I have seen the fear in their eyes, and it is as real as the beard on my face.
Ducky, 6 months of research and a trip to Transylvania down the drain.
Perhaps not, Miss Sloan. When one door closes, another may open. One of the men claimed to have been taken prisoner by these creatures. When he returned, he had this.
It looks like some kind of map. What's that writing say?
Central Hive. The rest is in some kind of code.
I discovered it when I came upon his body in the snow. His skin had been badly burned, as if by acid. Someone wishes this to remain secret.
Vlad? Mr. Vladimir, are you all right? I think you're getting a nosebleed. Dang high altitude.
That's no nosebleed, Timmy. Unless wearing a knife in the back of your neck is some new Transylvanian fashion.
Look out, Molly! Some creep's throwing knives!
There, Timmy! By the window! Get behind this table! Duck!
You, with the knife!
Huh? Look, Molly, who's this guy?
I don't know, but he could give Valentino a run for his money.
You look a little cold. Maybe you'd be warmer under this bear pelt. In fact, why don't you enjoy a nice fire, assassin? Run, Miss Sloan! Mr. Mendez, you're not safe here! Get out while you can!
Wait, who are you?
There's no time! You'll find what you seek at Lord Crawford's!
Lord Crawford? But how did you know? Mister?
Where'd he go?
I don't know, Timmy, but we don't have time to play Marco Polo. We're knee-deep in stiffs with no alibi. Throw those dog kickers into gear, kid, and don't look back until we get to Scotland!
Three days after their encounter in Transylvania, we find Molly and Timmy in the back seat of a Bentley. It's Lord Michael Crawford's 55th birthday, and virtually every person of importance worldwide has been invited to Falkirk, Scotland, to celebrate at Castle Cradmore.
I can't get that stranger out of my head. Where did he come from? And how did he know we were going to Lord Crawford's? This ain't the movies, kid, and you don't just happen upon Gary Cooper in the mountains of Romania.
Gosh, Molly, you think the guy's bad news?
I don't know, Timmy, but I'm pretty sure we haven't seen the last of him. I just hope that Vlad's map amounts to something.
Central Hive, huh?
That's right, kid. Hey, you all right?
You're looking a little peaked. I guess my head's kind of in a whirl from all this travel, Molly. Back in Texas, we were lucky if we got to go to the county seat for the livestock show, let alone fly across the Atlantic all the way to Romania, trek through the foothills of the Carpathian Mountains, then rush off to Scotland to celebrate the birthday of one of your father's buddies from the war to end all wars.
Stick with me, kid, and you'll get those dance steps down.
Look, Molly, up ahead. Is that Cradmore? I've seen pictures of castles, but I never thought I'd see one in real life.
Oh, Cradmore. Isn't it grand, Timmy?
You okay, Molly?
Huh? Oh, I was just thinking about all the happy memories I've had here. Why, it was just by that creek that Larry proposed to me.
Dr. Lawrence Webster, the brilliant interspatio-temporal quantum physicist?
That's right, kid.
Too bad that story you were chasing about orphan slaves on the Mexican border meant you had to leave him at the altar.
Yes, too bad. Well, kid, I'd rather have the Pulitzer than that old ball and chain any day.
A whole lot has changed since then, lass. I don't think I'd be proposing to any bunny maidens these days at Cradmore.
Is that so, driver?
Aye, I've given Lord Crawford me notice. Aye, too many strange things. I don't even trust me eyes anymore. And a driver can't be worrying about that. Ah, here we are. Accursed Cradmore.
What do you mean, strange things?
What do I mean by strange things? Lights coming on and going off in the wee hours of the night. Terrible shadows and hellish, slurping, demonic sounds. It's the devil's work for sure.
The devil must be hard at work with your imagination, old man.
Oh, good evening to you, Master Mysterian. Well, I'll be driving myself back to the village. I don't spend me nights out here at Cradmore.
Mysterion, eh? The famous hypnotist?
Mesmerist, actually.
Wow! You're really Mysterion? I can't believe I get to meet you in real life. Can you, Mr. Mysterion, do you think you could... Well, what I'm trying to say
is... Look into my eyes, young one, and feel the power of Mysterion the Magnificent!
Hey, Timmy, snap out of it! What'd you do to him? He looks like a mannequin in a Macy's window display.
It's the simplest of tricks. I merely overpowered his will. And you must be Molly Sloan, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and daughter of William Randolph Sloan, the millionaire publisher. I look forward to discussing your views on how to make an impression on human society. Personally, I do not believe it can be done with mere words.
I guess if I could shut Timmy up that easy, I'd feel the same way. But enough already with...
Yes, I must prepare for this evening's performance. Lord Crawford is waiting for you. He's been ill and not quite feeling himself. And now for Mr. Mendez!
Can you hypnotize me? Hey, what? What's going on?
Yeah, what is going on?
Inside the Great Hall of Cradmore, recently installed electric lights flicker and pulse, barely illuminating the dark shadows of the castle's stone corners. An unearthly chill cuts through the air with a shiver.
Welcome, Molly. Welcome.
Happy birthday, Lord Crawford. It's so nice to see you again. I'm really looking forward to tonight's party. This is my assistant, Timmy Mendez.
I hope you are hungry, Molly. My servants have prepared a special blood pie for supper. I think you will enjoy Mysterion's performance. He's magnificent. Just magnificent.
Hey, he looked right through me.
Hush, Timmy. Oh, Lord Crawford, it's been such a long time since I've seen you. Mother sends her love.
How kind. But now I must rest. Jeeves, show Miss Sloane to her quarters.
As you wish.
There's something odd here, Molly.
Odd like the number 13, kid. My mother passed away when I was 4. Lord Crawford has been a friend of my father since I was just a kid. And he didn't even bat an eye when I told him Mother said hello.
Whoa, you're right! You think this has something to do with that mysterious stranger's strange warning back in Transylvania?
I don't know, kid, but you can bet your old man's pig farm I'm gonna find out.
Your rooms.
I'll see you at the party, Timmy. Hopefully they set a place for you. If not, you can always chew on that taffy you love so much.
As the thunderstorm rages, Molly peers out her window. Lightning illuminates an immense tent supported by an enormous metal pole that sticks out through the top of the canvas. It appears Lord Crawford's birthday is to be celebrated outdoors, storm or no. Soon, Molly and Timmy join a host of the world's who's who under the big top.
I hope this tent is waterproof. I still don't see why they couldn't have had the party in the banquet hall.
Come on, Molly. It's just like being at a great big circus, except instead of popcorn and peanuts, we've got champagne and caviar. Hey, isn't that the Prince of Monaco?
I'll say. And if that's not Greta Garbo next to him, I'll be a monkey's uncle.
Molly, see you after the show.
You bet you will, Clark. You still owe me that drink.
Clark Gable? Wow.
Well, it sounds like Mr. Magic's about ready to cook up some hocus pocus.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to be performing in front of such an extraordinary gathering of celebrities and diplomats. I assure you, there's no prestidigitation here, only my own revolutionary form of mesmerism. With the power of my fully actualized human brain, I can turn normal men into mere puppets controlled by my unshakable will. Now, for the first exploit in my performance, I require a volunteer from the audience.
Oh, Molly, I hope Mysterion picks me.
Me too, kid. If you're distracting everyone, I can poke around the castle and find the source of Lord Crawford's sudden amnesia.
Yes, Mr. Mendez. Please come to the stage.
Good luck, kid.
You too, Molly.
Mr. Mendez, are you trained in the art of music?
Why, no, Mr. Mysterion. I don't even know how to play the kazoo.
Well, my young friend, notice the piano stage left. Please sit at it.
Okay.
Now, play!
Well, I'm not sure. Holy moly! Mysterion, it's like my hands have a life of their own. Wow!
Yes, Mr. Mendez, my powers are extraordinary. And now you shall tap dance for the audience while playing piano.
I will? Whoa! This is incredible!
Excellent job, Mr. Mendez. Please, don't leave the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may have noticed that we are out of doors, sheltered by a large canvas. You may have noticed that a giant metal rod juts out from the top of the tent. You may have noticed that a thunderstorm rages outside. Now, notice the curtain rising behind me. Behind that curtain sits a device of unstoppable power. A mesmer machine designed to entrance this entire room. Ladies and gentlemen, behold the mesmographer!
Wow! Look at all those wires and gauges. I've never seen anything like that before. I bet you need a whole megawatt to run that thing.
Precisely, Mr. Mendez. In just a moment, lightning will strike the pole at the top of this tent, providing the electrical power for this magnificent machine. And you, Mr. Mendez, shall flip the switch.
Me? Okay.
Come, elements! Strike this place! Unleash your power and bring my mesmographer to life!
A bolt of plasma thunders from the sky, striking the lightning rod. Inside, the tent crackles with electricity, and Mysterion's mysterious machine grinds to life.
The switch, Mr. Mendez!
Yes, indeed, pathetic. pathetic sheep. You are all under my sway. Now I shall commune a secret word that shall remain in your subconscious minds. One day soon, you shall hear it and do as I command. The word? Rutabaga! Rutabaga! Can you feel it, my subjects, coursing through you? The awesome will of Mysterion the Magnificent?
Yes, Master.
Oh, no, you don't, villain.
Where did you come from? Get off the stage, you meddling interloper.
Mysterion, whatever they've told you is a lie. Humans and Zygonians can't coexist. Run, Mr. Mendez. I have to destroy this infernal device. Hi-ya!
Not the Mesmoglifier! My beautiful machine! Get that man!
Meanwhile, in the dark corridors of Cradmore, a certain reporter makes her own discovery.
Well, Miss Sloane, time to play a little Sherlock Holmes. All right. All's clear in this hallway. Now to do some snooping around. What's that? Sounds like someone's trying to call for help. It's coming from the kitchen. The cook! That's quite a knot you've gotten yourself tied into. Hold tight. I'll cut you loose.
Molly, you shouldn't be here.
Oh, Lord Crawford, you scared me.
You should be in the tent, enjoying Mysterion's magnificent performance.
Lord Crawford?
Now I'm afraid you leave me no other choice.
But the cook!
There's something I need to show you, Molly.
Lord Crawford! You're turning into a giant hawk! Oh, Molly!
When Molly comes to, she finds herself chained to a medieval rack alongside Timmy, looking up at the shadowy Gothic arches that support the ceilings of the dungeons of Cradmore. A rat scurries along the wall. Mysterion paces in front of them.
Oh. My head. Where am I?
Ah, Miss Sloane. So nice to have you back among us. We've been adrift without your relentless meddling.
Mysterion, you rat! What have you done to Lord Crawford?
Lord Crawford? If I were you, I'd be more concerned with my own fate.
How could you, Mysterion? Magic is a sacred duty.
Mr. Mendez, your aw-shucks naivete is a true delight. But I believe I have an even more sacred duty. Domination of all mankind. Yes. Once I activate the central hive in Tunis, the rest of the world's leaders will fall under my sway, ensuring my absolute supremacy over this entire globe.
Molly, the central hive.
Hush, Timmy.
But enough about my itinerary. I'm much more interested in our mysterious interloper, the simpering ape who destroyed my mesmographer.
I have no idea what you're talking about, creepo.
Really? That's not what my sources in Romania tell me.
You! You're the one who had Vlad killed!
Indeed. You were so close to discovering our project in Transylvania, we had to abandon that base of operations. No matter. Soon we will have a base of operations in every corner of the globe.
Mysterion, the globe is a sphere. It doesn't have any corners.
Shut up, Mr. Mendez!
I've got news for you, Mysterion, the so-called Magnificent. When my story hits the presses, the only base of operations you'll have is an 8x10 cell in the federal lockup.
Oh, dear. We can't have that now, can we? Fortunately for me, my dear, you won't be writing any more stories. Have you forgotten that you are at this very moment chained to a medieval rack?
No!
Amazing invention, the rack. It can literally tear a person limb from limb. And they call that the Dark Ages? Who is your interloper?
The name's Wilcott, Ben Wilcott. And it's time to drop the curtain on your little show, Mysterion.
Look into my eyes!
Not this time, Mysterion. We're going to settle this the old-fashioned way.
Take this, fiend!
Wow! You really clocked that Mysterion good!
Yeah. Congratulations. I'll get you a nice trophy. Meanwhile, anyone feel like getting me out of this contraption?
Of course, Miss Sloane. Thank the Archive you're all right. Here, take my hand.
Oh, my legs. They're like jelly. Oh.
Don't worry. I've got you, Miss Sloane.
Oh, well, thanks again, stranger. So do you work for Rescue Incorporated, or are you just freelance?
Seriously, thanks, mister. But just who are you?
I'm a librarian from Flagstaff, Arizona. But that's not important right now.
They teach you how to fight like that in library school?
We'd better get moving. Can you walk?
I can manage. Follow me, boys. The cook showed me a shortcut when I was a kid. Right along the wall. Here. Push.
Secret passage, huh?
Allow me, please.
Oh, that's beautiful, Doc.
Wow! What is that? I've never seen a flashlight like that.
It's a personal high-resolution lucidator. We call them pearls. To the right?
After you, Mr. Wilcott.
Who do you suppose he means by we?
I don't know, Timmy, but I'm pretty sure he's not talking about the National Federation of Librarians.
On a train through Europe.
It took a while, but I found some genuine all-American Atlantic City taffy. Did I miss anything?
Not hardly, kid. Rescue Boy here was just explaining how he's gonna knock out that central hive.
Maybe this map will help.
What's this?
We got it from our contact in Transylvania, but it's written in some kind of code.
Let me see.
Wow! What's with that wristwatch gizmo?
Yeah, what is that thing, Dick Tracy?
It's an Alpha 3 wrist top.
Alpha 3? Molly.
I know, kid, I know.
Just as I thought. This isn't just a map. It's a ground plan of the Central Hive.
You seem to know a lot about this Central Hive, Mr. Wilcott. That must be some library you have in Flagstaff.
Miss Sloane, Mr. Mendez, I think it's time you knew the truth.
Oh, bully, I love a good secret.
You saw something at Cradmore, Miss Sloane. A man, mysteriously transformed into something so terrible, it made you lose consciousness.
How did you...
What seemed a horrible nightmare was in fact very real. The man you saw was not Lord Michael Crawford. He was no man at all. That abhorrent vision you saw was his true form. A hyper-intelligent monster with unstoppable mental powers. This creature is a Zygonian. A race of creatures I've sworn to stop at any cost. A race of creatures from outer space.
Fascinating! I knew there was more to this story. Are you getting this down, Timmy?
But Molly...
Get scribbling, kiddo. They'll probably give me some kind of double Pulitzer for this one.
Roger, Molly. You can count on me.
Space aliens, you say? Of course. There could be no other explanation. And you say they're from Zygonia?
Zygon, actually. Look, I know it must sound incredible.
No, Wilcott, this is the first thing you've said that actually makes sense. And this central hive, that's some sort of spaceship?
No, it's a kind of nerve center. The Zygonians will use it as a base of operations when their main fleet arrives in 2095.
Daddy would like these guys. They really plan ahead.
So you found out about the invasion, and now you're going to Tunis to save the world. Wow, we got a real-life hero in our midst, Molly.
I'll say, kind of a tall order for a librarian, isn't it, Wilcott?
Each of us has a destiny, Miss Sloane. For good or for evil. Perhaps your destiny is to change the world through your reporting. My own destiny stands clearly before me. The Zygonians took something from me. Something deeply personal.
And if it takes every ounce of life I have in me, I will put an end to their terror once and for all. If you'll excuse me, I think I'll see if I can find a newspaper. Excuse me.
Good grief! The poor sap's bananas!
You can say that again. I contacted the Flagstaff Library like you asked. They have no record of a Ben Wilcott.
Maybe I should have you contact the Flagstaff Loony Bin.
That was some tall tale, huh? The poor guy's definitely a few eggs short of a dozen.
Too bad. He was starting to look kind of cute.
Do you think he's dangerous?
I don't know, Timmy. But one thing I do know. If Mysterion's going to be in Tunis, that's where the story is. And I have a hunch this Wilcott's gonna lead us right to it.
We may have trouble. Some men in uniform were questioning the conductor. I heard them mention an American reporter.
Holy smokes! The train's coming to a stop!
It's not hard to guess who they're looking for. Help me open this window. All right, Mr. Wilcott. Gentlemen first.
But I...
Timmy, you're next.
You're not going nowhere.
That's anywhere. If we're not going nowhere, that means we're really going somewhere.
But I said... Was?
Take that! And I got three more on my left, tough guy.
Well, I'll be on...
Let's get out of here, kid. Through the window.
Jeez Louise. Out of the frying pan and into the freezer.
It's getting dark. If we don't find shelter or a way out of here soon, we'll either freeze to death or...
I can't feel my toes.
Here, take my coat.
How chivalrous of you.
Yes, but chivalry isn't going to get us to Tunis. We have no time to waste.
Up ahead. I think I see a building.
Good eyes, Timmy. Looks like a stable. Come on. Let's get this door open and see if there's any horses in here. Day. You ride, don't you, kid?
Four-time goat roping champ of Armstrong County.
Great archive, not a horse. Anything but a horse.
What's the matter, Doc? You're looking kind of pale.
Horses. It's their eyes. They know too much.
Look, I'm a champion dressage rider from my prep school days. You'll be fine. Just hop on and hold on tight.
I don't know.
Molly, the cops have spotted us. They're coming this way.
Stop them!
Snap to, Wilcott!
Oh, may the archive protect me.
Good boy. Let's kick up some snow. Yeah!
After a difficult journey out of the Alps, our heroes board a steamer across the Mediterranean and finally arrive in the port city of Tunis, capital of Tunisia, in North Africa. Outside a seedy tavern near the docks...
What was the name of this contact again?
Jean-Pierre Desperoir. He helped me break up an Algerian bootlegging ring.
Can't we trust him?
Verdict's out, kid, but there's one language we have in common. Lucre.
He doesn't sound like someone I would...
Timmy, do you have a better idea?
No, but I'm...
Jean-Pierre has no better friends than Andrew Jackson and Ulysses S. Grant, and this gal's purse is swimming with them. All right. Before we go in, you should know this pub is pretty dangerous. Keep your eyes peeled.
Eyes peeled. I had forgotten about that one.
There he is, by the spittoon.
Mademoiselle Solange, such a work of beauty you are. I see you are in need of my services yet again.
Keep your mitts off her, you creep.
Who is your little friend, Mademoiselle Solange? Perhaps I've given him a lesson on being a big man, huh?
Are you sure about this guy?
No. Well, Jean-Pierre, it's been... quite a while.
Mais oui, Mademoiselle Solange. Your ravishing beauty has been missed in my little corner of the world.
What's the
keeps pouring on his food.
That's salt, Ben. You ever hear of salt?
Salt? You mean that's real? In my time, I mean where I come from, salt, the white rock, the moon powder, is just the stuff of legend. Salt. Can I taste some?
But of course, the salt, she is the most tasty. I can get you as much as you like for a price. This is how we fund our little organization, huh? We trade in salt from the mines of Taudini. But you are a strange one, no? To never taste the taste of the salt.
Strange? You've got a gift for understatement, Jean-Pierre. Now, let's get down to brass tacks. Has there been any talk on the street about something called a central hive?
My memory? She is not so good these days, huh?
Maybe this will help.
Central Hive. Oh, I believe I have heard mention of such a thing.
Well?
But first, another whiskey, no?
I think you've had enough.
You think so, eh? How about I crush you with my thumb, eh?
Try me, jackal.
That's enough. Jean-Pierre, I'll buy you an entire keg of whiskey if you get us to this Central Hive.
You have for you, as you American like to say, a deal, no?
The licentious Jean-Pierre Desperoir leads Molly, Timmy, and Ben through a labyrinth of narrow, cobblestone streets. Suddenly, the surroundings open up to reveal the bustling, open-air bazaar known as the Marché Lafayette.
Look, Molly! It smells delicious!
Fresh lamb kebabs, 100% alive!
Look, Molly, a bird shop! We don't get plumage like that in Texas.
You will meet death soon.
What did you say?
You will die later today in a terrible accident.
Just ignore him. He says that to everyone.
In that shop there is the place where the many strangenesses are. They come and go from there, Liz. Empty one.
In the shop with the Persian rugs?
The entrance to the hive? She is hidden in the back of the shop. But to get there, you must make it past the shopkeeper. He is a clever man, a dangerous man.
You got anything else for us?
I must go. I believe I have a keg of whiskey waiting for me, no? Good luck.
Goodbye.
Good riddance.
All right. Timmy, Ben and I are going in first. We'll distract the shopkeeper. Wait 3 minutes, then go round back and find that secret entrance.
Okay, what do you have in mind?
We're going rug shopping, Mr. Wilcott.
Can I help you?
Yes, we're looking for a rug.
You wouldn't happen to be an American by chance?
Why do you ask?
I'm told that a beautiful American reporter named Molly Sloan might be headed this way with her assistant, and you just happen to fit that description.
Oh, that's not us. We're newlyweds on our honeymoon.
We are?
I mean, yes, we are.
And we're looking for a rug to bring home to our new house we just bought together.
Exactly. Rugs for our home. Exactly right, my love.
You don't look like newlyweds.
We are, I assure you.
Where are your rings?
Our rings? Our rings! We left them at the hotel.
Yes, at the hotel.
What hotel? Surely you know the hotel at which you are staying?
The Meridian, just up the street.
I have an associate who works there. I'll check with him. And your names are?
Mr. and Mrs. Ben Wilcott.
I'm going to have to keep you here. my assistant Omar should be arriving at any moment. Omar excels at coaxing information from unwilling collaborators.
Easy with that pistol there.
You must have us mistaken for someone else. We're just on our honeymoon. Oh, darling, you look so lovely I could just kiss you.
Kiss me? Why, of course, Sugar Plum. Oh, that was nice.
How romantic. I'll have Omar prepare the honeymoon suite for you.
Oh, that won't be necessary.
If only our son Timmy were here.
Yes, Timmy! Our son Timmy! Now would be a good time for our son, whose name is Timmy, to show up. Timmy!
You have a son? I thought you were just married.
No need to get violent, Mr. Shopkeeper. Well, you see, Timmy is a dog. Timmy! Your timing couldn't be any better, kid. You find that secret entrance? We don't want to be here when our pal Omar shows up.
What happened?
We had a run-in with Peter Lorre's twin brother. Huh. Well, Mr. Wilcott. Meridian, huh?
Oh, I noticed it as we were coming here.
Good thing, too. I like a man who takes care of the details.
Thanks. You weren't so bad yourself, Molly.
Well,
On an island in a sea of Zygonian sludge sits a giant, tiered, gelid mound made up of a sinister alien substance. The hive nucleus towers 60 feet above our heroes' heads. Sludge pulsates down its surface like a water wall.
Let me taste it.
He's headed right for that thing!
Timmy! Don't touch them!
Must have the honey!
Oh no, you don't!
What happened? Where am I?
You were spellbound by that hive nucleus thingy. It really had your number, kiddo.
It was horrible. The visions, millions of people drowning in sludge. I could feel their pain.
You will feel their pain, Mr. Mendez.
Mysterion!
I can't see him.
He's up above our heads on some sort of window washer's rig.
You thought you had escaped, yet you fell right into my trap. Lucky for me that you met this man.
Hello, Mademoiselle Sloane.
Jean-Pierre!
You traitor!
What can I say? His baguettes are very deep.
Enough! There is, of course, one final step to making this hive functional. Despawa, release the sludge!
The sludge! It's starting to rise!
Yes, sludge is the very foundation of Zygonian life. Our extraterrestrial friends are prone to desiccation, so this chamber must be sealed and filled to the brim in order to hydrate the Zygonian egg sacs. A dire set of affairs for the three of you, I'm afraid. If you do not pass out from the stench, if you do not suffocate as the sludge rises over your heads, then your skin will be eaten away by the caustic chemicals as you become nourishment for the Zygonian zygotes!
I'd rather die here than live to see the nightmare you've created, ghoul!
'Tis a pity, really. You three will miss an exciting era. After the 162-year gestation period, these newly hatched spawn will join the main Zygonian fleet as it arrives from outer space. And together, they will enslave all of humanity. And for my small part in helping to manipulate this mercenary masterpiece, the Zygonians have allowed me to rule all the Earth. Farewell.
You'll never get away with this, villain.
Oh, I do beg to differ. Despawa, take us up.
The roof! It's sliding open!
They're escaping! And the sludge is getting closer!
Molly, here. Climb on my back. I know it's not much, but if there's any chance of survival, it will give you a few more seconds.
Jean-Pierre, now!
into the sludge, Scum King!
I'm falling! You'll pay for this, Sloan! Rutabaga!
Gaspar! Rutabaga!
You cannot hypnotize me, you clown!
Oh, it burns! Make it stop! It's horrible!
Hurry up and get that thing down here, Jean-Pierre! We've only got seconds!
What's happening? You were bluffing this whole time?
Oui, Monsieur Wincott. Always my allegiance is only to Mademoiselle Sloane. Everyone aboard the scaffold! Vite! We have no time to waste!
And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. If you are interested in hearing the rest of that, you can tune in on the next subsequent weeks, or you could go on to the Kulch at some point during April 30th, May 1st, next weekend, to take a listen to some more of the Intergalactic Nemesis in its full multimedia glory. Well, my name is Brian McDonald, and that's all the time that we have for Scald's Hall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have...